Terence Robinson from Cornell University, and he's going to be talking about precision nutrient management in apple orchards.
At Cornell University, we've had a long tradition of nutrient management research in apple, and I want to acknowledge for many, many years, Warren Stiles led us in a really exciting and very sound nutrition program. In the year 2000, Dr. Lalieng Chang replaced him, and he and I have been working since in managing nutrition of apple orchards. But what I wanted to comment on is that 3 years ago, we launched a new way to talk about this, and we call it Precision Orchard Management, acronym POM, which I like a lot because it relates to POM and pomology. You all get that right. But a subset of POM, precision crop load management, which I'm not going to talk about today, and we have precision everything, but precision nutrient management is a subset of that, which I want to try to define for you today and explain what we're doing in relation to how to extend to growers these concepts. Our definition of precision nutrient management includes four concepts. First, definition of the proper timing of applying nutrients and the proper rate. Number two, developing cultivar-specific nutrient management programs. Number three, apply nutrients based upon yield, and Dr. Chung has done some excellent new, I think, very fundamental and groundbreaking research on how much we need of each nutrient at different yield levels in high-density orchards. And then lastly, variable rate applications of fertilizer based upon the similar concepts used in agronomic crops of precision nutrient management. Let me first start with research that has been going on over the years on timing and rate. The goal in this part of our program is to define what the need is for the plant, and then also to define proper timings that will optimize both fruit quality and yield, and then long-term cropping. Now, as we all know that are involved in the field, fruit crops are very different than agronomic crops in that we have a fruit quality component that we have to pay attention to. Hence, for example, with nitrogen, we get too much nitrogen, fruit color suffers, fruit firmness and storageability. And if we have too little nitrogen, fruit size suffers, we enter into biennial bearing. Hence, we can't just apply tons of nitrogen and expect optimum performance. So this balancing act, particularly with nitrogen and secondarily with potassium, lead us to the concepts of precision nutrient management, primarily to optimize quality, yield, and reduce biennial bearing. Now, this is a study that was done by Dr. Chang in about 2007 or 8 or 9, I forget, in which he grew these potted gala trees for several years, got them up to a full-size tree, and then imposed different nitrogen levels and did destructive sampling over the course of two seasons to define nutrient demand for each of the nutrients. He also imposed these variable rates of nitrogen, and it shows clearly here the kinds of fruit color and the growth that we would get with increasing amounts of nitrogen converted from the amounts we put on those pots to an acre basis by spacing the plants at the typical tall spindle spacing of 3 feet by 12, or 90 centimeters by 3.5 meters. Now, you see here clearly the decrease in color as we increase nitrogen applications with gala. Interestingly, also, we had this very dramatic effect on return bloom, which is shown here with these amounts of nitrogen applied the previous year and the crops that they carried going from a low nitrogen to increasing up to 262 units per hectare or pounds per acre. And then the next year, the similar sort of reduction in flowering with low nitrogen levels. So if we keep nitrogen level low for improved color, we run the risk of then biennial bearing have been becoming a problem. In the destructive sampling project that he completed, he measured nitrogen gain on the whole tree and in the shoots and leaves and in fruit over the time course of a season. And he did this for all nutrients. I'm showing here just for time the nitrogen data, which shows that in the first 40 days of the season, the plant essentially did not accumulate any nitrogen. Then there was almost a linear increase of nitrogen through the rest of the season, we're totaling about 20 grams per tree, or converted to an acre basis on this spacing of a tall spindle orchard, about 50 pounds to the acre. When you look at where that nitrogen was, in the first part of the season, most of that nitrogen went into shoots and leaves and rapidly increased up to a certain level, and then no new nitrogen as shoot growth stopped. Whereas fruit growth, the nitrogen accumulation in the fruit came up slowly and was pretty much linear the whole season. Now, you'll notice that there was an increase in nitrogen in the first few years, or first few days of the season, from the 0 to 40, but that came from remobilization into new shoots, and new nitrogen really started about 40 days after bud break. Now, this pattern indicates to us that trees, apple trees in particular, have a relatively high nitrogen status early in the season, and that promotes this rapid canopy development and early fruit growth. But as the season progresses, there's less need for nitrogen, and generally late amounts of nitrogen reduce fruit color and also give us the risk in northern climates of some winter damage. So we draw this curve for nitrogen demand in this manner, the red line showing this rapid increase early in the spring, reaching a peak about 60 to 70 days after bud break, and then the demand declining. Now, the sources of that nitrogen to supply that demand come first from reserve nitrogen in the plant, and you see that that's very important in the first 30 days and maybe first 40 days, and then soil nitrogen in our climate, which has cool soils in the springtime, it starts to become then a source of nitrogen as we get further into the season, peaking about 90 days after bud break. Now, in terms of our conclusions about timing of nitrogen, it seems to us that we have an opportunity to apply nitrogen both at early timings, that's either from bud break to petal fall, and I'm going to talk about this petal fall timing as a way to more precisely apply nitrogen in a minute, or to apply it in the fall, either right before harvest or right after harvest, to try to preload the tree with nitrogen for the following season. Now, we do have some growers who have a different vision, and for them, in some cases, especially with low fertility soils where we need to add nitrogen on a regular basis, or varieties that don't seem so sensitive to color and nitrogen, they've been applying multiple split applications during the spring and summer period. And it's not really what we prefer, but we have some very successful growers that are doing this. Now, secondly, let's talk about the amount of nitrogen to apply. In our precision nutrient management program, we suggest that growers consider both the nitrogen requirement, but also the amount of nitrogen supplied from the soil and then the efficiency of uptake of fertilizers. For example, in our climate and in our soils, we have a fair amount of organic matter, usually 4 to 5%. And that varies a lot between sites. So with precision nutrient management, we first ask the growers to define for their site a site-specific nitrogen supply amount from their soil. Generally, about 1% organic matter releases about 20 pounds of nitrogen per year with an uptake efficiency of about 60%. So about every 1% of organic matter you have in the soil contributes about 12 actual pounds to the apple tree. We also use a rule of thumb that for every 10% increase in fertilizer, it results in a 0.1% increase in leaf nitrogen. So that's the first major point that a grower must do to implement this program, is to define the amount of nitrogen supplied by their specific soil. We secondly have to take into account foliar nitrogens that are applied, and these are extremely common in our industry, a lot of foliar nitrogen. Now, nitrogen that's applied early in the season is generally at a very low rate, 3 to 5 pounds of urea per 100 gallons, and this does contribute some to the total nitrogen demand, but it's not a huge percentage. However, in more recent years, particularly based on the work of Dr. Chung, more and more people have been applying substantial amounts in the fall, prior to leaf fall in late September or early October, about 22 applications of 25 pounds of urea, so that we then contribute a substantial portion of the annual nitrogen through this post-harvest or just at harvest application of foliar urea. The second aspect of precision nutrient management for us is trying to define cultivar-specific management programs. Now, particularly with apple, varieties differ substantially in the amount of nitrogen they can tolerate because of problems that come up in some varieties with excess nitrogen. Now, those of us from the Northeast are very attuned to this because McIntosh happens to be one of the worst varieties in the world for sensitivity to excess nitrogen. It becomes soft and will not store if nitrogen levels are relatively high. And so these differences have to be taken into account. And this goes back to many of the work that Warren Stiles did. But we have these rules which then a grower would put into his precision nutrient management program based upon the variety. Now, our orchards are composed usually of 5 to 10 varieties. And so it then becomes a very specific. These 4 rows of this variety get this nitrogen program, and these 4 rows of a different variety get a different one. For example, soft varieties, those listed here, particularly McIntosh, but also Honeycrisp and others, they require a much lower nitrogen level than do the hard varieties, such as Red Delicious or Galen. Now, in addition to that particular aspect about nitrogen, another point about variety-specific fertilizer programs or nutrient management programs is the management of calcium, particularly for bitter pit susceptible varieties. Now, I don't have time to really talk very much about this, but these varieties also include in our precision nutrient management program an intensive calcium management program, which we won't discuss at all in this presentation. The third aspect of precision nutrient management for us is to define the yield level that you are targeting. And we do this both through a precise crop load management and precise nutrient management. The strategy is to replace the amount of nutrients that you're removing with the fruit to sustain tree productivity and fruit quality. For those of us in the East, the nutrient that is most important in this aspect is potassium. Now, I've been very interested to watch Western fruit growers also suffer from potassium deficiency, even though they have thousands of pounds in the soil per acre. But because these high-density orchards with very limited rootstock soil or root systems, they can't access all that potassium, and they can also go down in potassium level quite rapidly. Now, Dr. Chung did this, I think, seminal work a couple of years ago trying to define nutrient requirement for each of the macro and micronutrients based upon yield level. And this shows some of the data from Gala showing the nutrient removal in relation to yield. The top corner there is nitrogen, showing a very, well, all very linear relationships, showing that as yield goes up, the number of pounds of nitrogen we haul away from the orchard in the bins of apples, it goes up linearly. You see also the same curve for potassium, phosphorus, boron, and for every one of the nutrients. He then converted this to these tables that are useful for our growers in setting up their precision nutrient management programs to define the amount of each nutrient that they should replace. Now, I want to just focus here on a couple of points. Let's assume that we're very good growers and we're going to achieve this extremely high yield of 2,000 bushels to the acre. That's essentially 100 bins to the acre for those of you from the West. If you look at the amount of nitrogen you haul away in the bins, it's only about 35 pounds. But you're hauling away 111 pounds of potassium. Hence, the nutrient that is most required for us to add back to the soil is potassium. You look at some of the others, phosphorus, less than 10 pounds, calcium, less than 10 pounds, magnesium, less than 10 pounds. And in terms of micronutrients, these are the grams per acre that are removed with the fruit. So in precision nutrient management, the strategy would be to add back on an annual basis the amounts of nutrient that are removed. Now, he did repeat this in the last 2 years with 2 other varieties just to confirm with Empire, and you see very similar relationships, and with McIntosh, very similar relationships. And now we have tables for each one of these 3 varieties indicating how many nutrients are removed each year as we harvest. As we have transitioned from low-density orchards to high-density orchards and more precise management of crop load, more growers are consistently achieving these 75 tons to 100 tons per hectare or 1,500 to 2,000 bushels per acre yields. And without very precise attention, particularly to potassium, they immediately start to have lower potassium levels, and that's very related to fruit size. So the summary of those first 3 points of precision nutrient management is that the removal of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and boron by fruit at harvest is closely related to yield. And therefore, we should take into consideration yield level when determining maintenance fertilizer inputs. And this leads me to comment briefly about the petal fall application. We have a very good climate in New York with consistent production. It doesn't vary a lot. But sometimes, and in other places it's worse, there is variation. And so if a grower applies all of his nitrogen based upon an expected yield of, say, 100 tons, and then there's a frost or some other issue, there's excess nitrogen applied. Similarly, there's a waste of potassium. And hence, we've been pushing this idea of putting on a portion of the nitrogen at bud break or the previous fall through these foliar urea sprays and waiting until petal fall and then making a decision about the crop load. And based upon that decision, based upon counting flower buds and fruit set and thinning, then making a decision on how much more nitrogen and potassium to apply at the petal fall or slightly after petal fall timing, to be more precise. Now, the last point that we've more recently started working on is this concept of, from the agronomic crops, of variable rate application of fertilizers. And the goal here is to reduce the spatial variability across a field in fruit quality, particularly when we've dealt with Honeycrisp, where we have some parts of the orchard that store poorly and with a lot of internal disorders and other parts that store well. It's led us to want to make the orchard or that field more consistent in terms of fruit quality. And then secondly, yield. Now, this is based on the hypothesis, and it may or may not be true, that the amount of nutrients in the fruit itself really is what determines fruit quality and to a certain extent yield. And that's led us to start this newer effort of mapping soils with georeference maps and then using these GPS-based maps to apply different rates of fertilizer across the field using variable rate fertilizer applicators. Very simply, those that aren't familiar with this, the old system used to be that we'd basically take a couple of soil samples from a field or on a grid basis and try to determine how much fertilizer to put on that field. We have now started to try to map fields in a more precise manner, and the hard way is to map on a grid basis. Now, agronomic crops use a half-acre grid. In orchards, particularly when we got four rows of Honeycrisp and we got four rows of Gala, we're mapping basically on a 100-meter down-the-row basis on a grid sampling. And that produces these maps with georeference sampling points. Mostly, though, we're fudging a little bit and using this machine produced by Veris Company, which is a electrical conductivity mapping machine, which we drag around the orchard fairly fast speed. And it measures electrical conductivity, which relates a lot to cation exchange capacity. And that produces a map that's georeferenced. We then use that map. Well, this is the way it works. Travels regular intervals throughout the field. Data is taken to create these management zone maps. And then we use soil sampling based upon that map to create soil nutrient maps. Now, that electrical conductivity is configured into these management zones, basically a field within a field. And we then identify 1, 2, 3, or 4 management zones within that field. And we then sample for nutrients, basic physical soil samples at those locations, and then produce nutrient maps for each one of the nutrients. And I want to just explain two examples here that from our recent work in New York. We've partnered with a company, a chemical supply company called Helena, and they do this for a very small fee. This is an apple orchard who had problems with some color and fruit size across his orchard. So we mapped it with electrical conductivity and then produced this potassium soil sampled and then produced this potassium map, which showed extremely high levels on one end of the field and extremely low levels on the other. And then that led to this sort of potassium recommendation map, which we then run up and down the rows with a fertilizer spreader to apply potassium. Now, we've done this 1 year. Seems to help. But that's one of the questions I want to pose for the group. How do you do scientific research with this kind of thing? I can't replicate this. The only way I know how to do research is with replicated trials. So I've been scratching my head for several years how to do real good research. Let me pose another example. This is a block where there's an existing orchard here across the bottom, and they took out several rows, and then they cleared woods for a new section, and so we have previously wooded land and a previous orchard land. When we map this for both pH, later potassium I'll show you, we came up with this pH soil map ranging from lows in that wooded area from 4.9 to up in this part that had been orchards, more 6.6, and then there's a 6.9 area. That then can convert to lime maps, which we can then apply variably with the variable rate lime spreader, to apply more lime in this section here with extremely low pH, not very much in the part that was old orchard, it's already up to 6.5, and this part that was 6.9, essentially none. It seems like it should be a good idea, seems like it should help save money or at least put the lime where we need it the most, but how to measure whether or not this gains us any economic value is the question I pose for the group today. This is the soil test map we got from that. You can see that in some cases we had up a relatively high potassium levels, 150. You know, that's not high for you Western soils people, but for us that's normal. In some places that are relatively low down here at 62 pounds per acre. And then this would be the map that we would use with the variable rate fertilizer, concentrating the potassium in this area that used to be woods with relatively little in what used to be orchard, because that area had been receiving potassium regularly. So, to summarize, I want to just put this little summary up, which I'll go through in a minute, but I want to pose the question to start with. This effort to more precisely apply nutrients, primarily for us it's potassium and nitrogen, but other nutrients as well, including calcium, is aimed at trying to improve profitability. But it's difficult to sometimes know whether we have any impact on profitability. If we can reduce variability in fruit quality with Honeycrisp, for example, and have fewer disorders, that's worth a lot of money. But that includes knowing when to apply nitrogen, when not to apply it, when to apply potassium, the amount. So the timing and rate is critical. And for us, I've described how we use both early spring and fall timings. Knowing the cultivar-specific requirement, nitrogen requirement on Macintosh versus Red Delicious or Honeycrisp. Then using this yield-dependent nutrient management program, particularly to replace potassium and nitrogen based on yield. And what we're seeing is that most tall spindle orchards that have yields of somewhere 70 to 100 tons per hectare, we need more than 100 pounds of K. We need like 130 pounds of K2O annually with only a 60 to 70% efficiency. So we really have to be up there 150 pounds of potassium to 180 pounds every year if we can maintain those yields. And then lastly, to put the fertilizer where we need it spatially across that orchard using this mapping process, which is relatively cheap now. This commercial company will come in and map your orchard for $25 an acre, which makes it a very simple thing. Now, the question, how do I measure this? I don't know. Let me propose my idea, and I'd love for you guys to help me think it through. What we're trying to do is take an orchard that hasn't been mapped, which we think there's a lot of variability, and sample fruit nutrient content on a 100-meter grid. Every 100-meter sample fruits measure nutrient content before any precision nutrient management is done. Then map the orchard, and then for 3 years apply variable rate fertilizers and see if the variability across that orchard can be reduced over a 3-year precision nutrient management program. The best I can think of, but I'd be happy to hear any of your ideas. And with that, I thank you for your attention.
We have time for a few questions.
Yes, Clive.
So I looked at apples and cherries looking at nutrient fruit analysis when I worked with the Department of Ag back in South Africa. And we had a facility, it was a government facility, so it was free. So I ran 30,000 samples through the lab. What I found is that the fruit samples are totally variable, the leaf samples are way more consistent. So looking at your suggestion, I think maybe leaf sampling might be a better option.
That's a big debate between Lai Liang Chung and I, because he also is on your side and I'm on the other side, but we fought about it for 2 years now. I argue the opposite in that Honeycrisp disorders, I think, are related to fruit, the actual fruit mineral content, and if we're not measuring that, we may not pick up issues that give us fruit disorder problems.
So if it's a different
right. Maybe. Right behind you, SC first, and then you.
Oh, well, one of the other thoughts on fruit analysis is do you do it with the full-size fruit, or do you do it with the smaller fruit before you add in all the extra carbohydrates, so on with the fruit analysis?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And, you know, Lai Liang's accumulation data shows many of the nutrients are accumulated linearly. Now, some are not. And so we definitely have different amounts in the fruit at harvest than we did at the fruitless stage. I favor the harvest timing because I want to see what that fruit had at the moment we pick it, which is then going to help determine whether it stores or not. Now, I've done these fruit analysis for several years, and I didn't tell it today because the story is not pretty. It just doesn't correlate that well with storage disorders. I keep hoping, keep searching. Jesse.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could